Earlier today, President Bush dismissed a controversial new report on the number of civilian deaths in Iraq. And the president said he questioned the methodology of the report and said that General George Casey, the top U.S. commander in Iraq, didn't believe it was accurate, and neither do Iraqi officials. He said the methodology, the president said, had largely been discredited. He was referring to a report released by researchers at Johns Hopkins University that appeared this week in the online edition of The Lancet, a leading British medical journal. Researchers estimate that 654,000 more Iraqis have died of various causes after the invasion than would have died in a comparable period. And we're turning now to Jonathan Bohr, who's a medical reporter for the Baltimore Sun. He joins us on the phone from his office in Baltimore, Maryland. Nice to have you on the program.
Nice to be here.
And the report, first of all, let me ask some questions about the methodology of this report.
Sure.
As I understand it, the authors go into considerable detail about how they gathered this information.
Yes, they use a standard epidemiological tool. Remember, these are public health scientists. And this tool has been used to assess deaths due to natural disasters and war, such as the bloody civil war in the Congo. And basically, what they did was to identify close to 50 neighborhood clusters across the country. Then they dispatched Iraqi doctors to those clusters, and those doctors went door-to-door interviewing people in the households about births and deaths and asking for death certificates. And in 92% of the cases, people were able to produce death certificates for people they said had died in the war. It's almost like, think of it this way, superimposing a grid over the country and then taking a representative sample within each square of the grid and then extrapolating those results to the entire country, which has 26 million people.
Well, how, first of all, in the midst of a war zone, do you gather accurate information?
It's very difficult, and but they used Iraqi doctors whom they thought would have better standing and be in a more secure position than American scientists. And these doctors incurred considerable risk.
Jonathan Bohr, thank you for coming in to help us out on this question. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Bohr is a medical reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Joining us now is Dr. Gilbert Burnham, who's the lead author of the study and co-director of the Center for Refugee and Disaster Response at Johns Hopkins University. He's with us on by phone from his office on the campus there at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. Good of you to be here with us today.
Thank you.
Tell us about some of the findings of your research.
Well, what we found, as Jonathan mentioned, was a large number of people had died following the invasion over what we would have expected previously. And out of those 650-some thousand excess deaths, 600,000 were due to violence, and the majority of these were related to gunshot wounds.
Related to gunshot wounds, so we're talking about people caught in crossfires, people executed perhaps?
Probably all of that, yes.
And is there any breakdown on who caused these casualties?
Overall, the 40-month period of time that we measured, households ascribed 31% of deaths to the coalition. There was another sector that was due to other parties, but increasingly people didn't know, or they may have been hesitant to say, but it wasn't really clear who else was involved. But there are, as you know, criminal elements. There are various sectarian groups, and a lot of violence going on.
I referred earlier to a comment made today by President Bush at his news conference in the Rose Garden of the White House. And let's listen to the president as he dismissed these findings.
No, I don't consider it a credible report. Neither does General Casey, and neither do Iraqi officials. I do know that a lot of innocent people have died, and that troubles me and it grieves me. And I applaud the Iraqis for their courage in the face of violence. I am, you know, amazed that this is a society which so wants to be free that they're willing to, you know, that there's a level of violence that they tolerate. And it's now time for the Iraqi government to work hard to bring security in neighborhoods so people can feel at peace. No question it's violent, but this report is one they put it out before. It was pretty well, the methodology is pretty well discredited.
And Dr. Burnham, indeed, there was an earlier version of this story. As I understand it, you've gone back to get more data.
Yes, we did a similar study in 2004, a somewhat smaller study. And we built on the findings and the experience of that to design this study. And I think this study clearly has more power and more strength to it by changing methods based upon what we found from the previous survey. And it's interesting that if we look at the data from this survey, for the exact period of time for the previous survey, we get virtually the same results. So we have confidence in the methods.
Other accounts, other attempts to count civilian deaths in Iraq, the Iraqi Body Count, for example, website, which is run in London, no friend to the United States administration, they come up with very much smaller numbers, still more than the United States government is willing to admit, but 50,000, not 650,000.
Well, I think it very much depends on how you count deaths. And in the body count, they use mortuary figures and particularly media counts. And I think that's very useful in finding trends, finding directions, and so forth in fatalities. But you can't get from A to B. You can't get from facility reports to national data. That's just not possible. To do national data requires population-based census type data as we carried out. And the survey methods that we use are really very, very standard off-the-shelf methods. And these are the kind of things that all public health students learn how to do. And these are the methods that the U.S. government funds to be done all over the world and is responsible for much of the very excellent health data of countries in the world that the U.S. has supported in its collection.
When you describe these methods of the methodology, as we call it, the how you gather the data, give us some examples of other places this kind of method has been used.
Well, I think probably one of the most well-known is in the Congo, where International Rescue Committee, with one of our study authors, carried out a series of studies and found that 3.6 million people had died as a result of conflict there. Another place where it was used has been in the earlier studies in deaths in Darfur. And there I'm very proud of the fact that this was carried out by some of our Hopkins former students using the same methodology and using data that has been widely quoted by U.S. government and others in designing and encouraging a response to the serious situation in Darfur.
Critics said that the study you did in 2004 had too wide a confidence interval. First of all, what does that mean? And second of all, how did you address it in going back and doing more research?
A confidence interval are really two numbers, a low number and a high number. And between those two, we would be 95% confident that the true number is in that figure. And the figure that we choose to represent our findings, in this case the 654,000, represents statistically the most likely number. And the chance of a likely number being less or more drops off fairly quickly as you move from either side to either side of that number. Now, one of the things that will reduce confidence intervals is to increase the sample size. And we did increase the sample size substantially this time. So instead of having 900 households, we had 1,849 households. So it was a much bigger sample size. However, when you increase the sample size, you also increase the risk to your interviewers. So we have to do a trade-off here about how much risk we want to expose our interviewers to for the benefit of having narrower confidence intervals. And so that's an ethical as well as a practical decision.
Sure, and you would think that the greatest danger to your interviewers would be in many of the places where the incidence of death is the highest.
And in fact, interviewers in Iraq have been killed and have been injured before, and I'm very happy to say that none of that happened to any of our interviewers.
How do you respond when you hear the president say, as we just heard that piece of tape a moment ago, that your methods have been discredited, your report not credible?
Well, we are comfortable with the methods. We're comfortable with our results. And I think we're comfortable with the principal message which we want to come out of this, and that is that the population caught up in conflict is bearing a very serious consequence to this conflict. And with these numbers, we hope that it will stimulate discussion of how to improve the protection of people in conflict situations, not only in Iraq right now, but in the conflicts that will come in the future. We in this country have an excellent method for monitoring what happens to our soldiers, but at the same time, we need to be aware of what happens to people caught up in the conflict who really have no one to look to for protection, and that's a responsibility of the international community, and developing methods to protect them starts with good data, and that's where we want to start.
Dr. Burnham, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Right.
Gilbert Burnham, co-director of the Center for Refugee and Disaster Response at Johns Hopkins University, lead author of a controversial new study on civilian deaths in Iraq, which puts that number at 654,000. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.